This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Good evening. You are listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. Joining us tonight in our special event evening is the lovely Gabby, Kathy, and myself, Sue. Joining us in just a few moments is the former First Victorian Female Chief Commissioner of Police, Christine Nixon. Before she joins us, a big hello to all of our local and international listeners, including the lovely Jess in Florida, who listens regularly. A big hello to everybody who always listens in. Hello, Christine.
Hello.
I have to say my mum says hi because she will kill me unless I say that first. It doesn't matter what other priority we have to find out. I have to let you know that my mum says hi.
Thank you. Mums are really important.
You have a lot of mum followers, don't you?
I do, actually. I've always found their support was really open and a lot of mums come up and talk to me. And I remember my husband said to me once, Christine, they'll never sack you because their mums won't let them.
And that's so true because you are just – when I've talked about meeting you and talking to you, they are just inspired and have been inspired, and I think their lives have changed at some level because something that you've said or done or stood up for. So I want to get into your – so modest. I want to get into your role as police commissioner.
Yes.
How challenging was it not to be in that position but to get to that position? How challenging as a female was it?
Well, given that I started as a police officer back in 72, and there were very few women, and I remember people saying to me, well, you know, how long are you going to stay? Like a year or so? And so in the sense of that time, but it was also a time of change, and the 70s was really an opportunity, I think, for a lot of women who wanted to start to sort of, you know, see things different. And it was really the momentum, I think, that I was part of that really pushed. But there were a lot of barriers. There was things, if you got married, you couldn't stay in the police. If you had children, you couldn't stay. There was a limited range of things you could do. And so over the whole time, really, until I became the police commissioner, you know, things just kept being pushed to allow women to do a lot more. And I suppose I'm one of the people who pushed and kept pushing and will always do that to allow women the opportunity to be able to achieve what they should be able to achieve.
Christine, obviously, you know, you've achieved a lot in your life. And listening to you now talk about how difficult it was for women back then, why on earth would you decide to go into a role that you knew was probably going to be a challenge and into your career going forward?
I suppose it's partly the way I grew up. My mother, who is 86 and is still the same, I have to say, was really strong about independence and about the fact that you could achieve and you should, you know, get going and get on with it kind of stuff. And so I think I came from that background. So I did things as a youngster that, you know, I sort of became the Sunday school superintendent, you'll be pleased to know, when I was 15. And this was a real achievement, you know. And then I ran the youth group when I was 18. And so there was kind of the sense that I could achieve things. And so when I thought about what I wanted to do, my father said, oh, you can teach kindergarten or you could become a nurse, which are really good things to do, but none of them was what I wanted to do. And I didn't want to become a secretary, and they were the options really for many women in those days. And so I just thought maybe I'll join the police. Now, he was in the police, and I think I was probably a pretty rebellious 19-year-old as well, and said, well, you know, he said, no, you can't join. I said, oh, well, yes, I can. And so off I went. But in a sense, not knowing how bad it was going to be was probably part of it. And I think you sometimes get yourself into a situation where it's actually okay that you don't know how bad it's going to be, because you just get in, you go, well, I'm going to have a go and I'm going to push as hard as I can.
Why do you think your dad was against you joining the force?
I think he thought two things. One, he was quite prominent in the police and often pushed for change and was part of the Police Association in New South Wales executive. And so he'd pushed for a lot. So he thought I might actually encounter some problems because of him. And I think he said, look, it's a pretty boring job for women. They don't let you do a lot. So why would you want to do that? And so I think they were the both parts of it. But But I think he also knew that that change was on the horizon for policing, thank God, and for women particularly as well.
Because there is quite often, if not most majority of cases, there is a glass ceiling because of a range of issues. So surely in... Was it a men's club in the police?
Oh, absolutely.
At that time, and is it still now, do you think? Not so much?
Well, I think not so much now, but certainly in those days. I mean, I joined the New South Wales Police with 120 women and 8,000 men. Wow. And, you know, so, look, we all knew each other well, the girls, you know. And, but they were really strong women, I have to say. You know, those girls could have done anything. And so in the sense of... being a boys' club, it was a boys' club. But what I think happened, and what I watched in the early days, was the kind of boys even figuring out that maybe they didn't want to all behave like the boys either, and there was a lot of change that I watched go on. So these days, look, they're still, you know, dominated by men, but I think we're gradually changing and opening up.
Oh, sorry, Gabby, go.
Well, Christine, so you've worked in New South Wales Police and Victoria Police. Do you notice any difference in the way women work within the force within the two different states?
It's kind of an interesting difference. Victorian women police worked in operational policing a fair distance before the New South Wales women police did. And, you know, that was, I don't know exactly how that occurred, but it was partly just, you know, the opportunity, and I think the fact that people told the women just get out there and start to do operational policing. So in that sense, that was part of it. But I think what happened in New South Wales was, you know, a political support, women's electoral lobby, a women's coordination unit that really pushed hard for us to, women in policing in New South Wales, to be able to achieve and be, you know, go into a lot of different areas and the numbers to grow. The New South Wales Police is probably about 36-37% female, and many of the senior ranks, which I'm really proud about, are women. And because they got opportunities to do that. And so Victoria's not nearly that number, about 25%, I think, but that will grow over time. And I think it's just really the differences was New South Wales had a lot of opportunities. It had people who had a go. We've had deputy commissioners, a number of women assistant commissioners over time. And I think the other issue that New South Wales was in front was about external people being involved in panels to make the choices about who got the jobs. Okay. And I thought to myself a while ago that I only really got promoted because there were external people on panels, not the boys within. And that's what limits, I think, women on boards. It limits women in a lot of occupations, that if it's chosen from within, you know, your chances are a bit less when you open up and let other people be part of that choice too.
Okay. In light of that, it must have been quite difficult for women, and perhaps still the case in some ways, to resist the temptation to be like one of the boys, to, you know, join the boys' club and to be, you know, and to not be true to themselves in sort of a cliched way.
Yeah, look, you're perfectly right, and I suppose one of the stories, it's a little short story. Can I tell this?
Tell it long.
Okay. No, it's just short. But it was just an example when I was, I think I was a sergeant, and a bloke called me up and said, Christine, would you come out and see this young woman who's working for us? She's working in highway patrol in traffic. And so I was like, okay, fine. So I went out and he said, look, she keeps getting assaulted and we don't know what's the problem. You know, we don't know what happens. And so I said to her, look, why don't we just go out? Let's get in the car. Let's go for a drive. Just do what you normally do, and I'm just going to chat, you know, along the way about what it is. Anyway, we eventually this car flies by us, and she all of a sudden goes into this, let's get him. And I went, okay, fine. And so off she goes and roars after him, pulls him over. She got out of the car really sort of head up, and I got out of the car and stood sort of at the side, and she raced up, and she just let him have it. And she swore at him. She did everything else, and I went, what are you doing? And anyway, so I went over to her and said, you know, call me. And I went back to the bloke and said, listen, thank you, lucky stars, nick off, you know. So off he went. And he was very happy. And so I said, what are you doing? And she said, well, I'm doing what I always do. I said, no wonder you've been assaulted 10 times in the last, you know, couple of years. So in a sense, it's a, you know, it's a very obvious example of what you're talking about. But I think part of it is people want to fit in. You know, people do stuff in policing, people do stuff in jobs because they want to fit in and they don't want to be seen to be different. And so if that's what the boys do around you, that's what you do. And the real change I've seen, and I think we're seeing more of, is that women and men don't have to live up to that kind of a behaviour. That and I think the issue around people from the gay and lesbian community join policing is that they, you know, need to feel confident and comfortable in themselves about being policing. Policing's tough enough on its own without having to, you know, also be something that you're not. And I think that's the piece that's really important.
Absolutely. We are talking to Christine Nixon tonight, and we will be joining you in just a few moments. You can text us on 0427JOY949 if you do have a question, and we're quite happy to ask it. You can also call on 1300JOY949 or give us an email onair@joy.org.au. You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. Joining us in the studio is the amazing former first Victorian female Chief Commissioner of Police, Christine Nixon. We've got a couple of texts in, Christine.
Yes, we do. We have Brian, who says, "Lovely hearing you roar. Excellent listening." Thanks, Brian, champion. And the second one is for Christine's from Matt. Says, "Love the sense of integrity and authenticity that you bring to all your roles. Love, Ms. Nixon."
I think we all love Ms. Nixon.
Isn't that nice? Thank you.
You have such great support.
I agree.
Oh, you're just amazing. I want to talk about some of the changes that you implemented. Now, some of them may have been a little bit more challenging and some of them may have been easy. What are some of your, I guess, ones that you really think, that was a good one?
I think there was a range. The uniforms one was an interesting one, and that really came out of talking to the members of Victoria Police about what they thought needed to be done to allow them to do their job the best way they could. And that turned out that, you know, things like the leather jacket, which I thought was pretty crappy leather jacket, actually.
It was.
It was very fond.
It was blue.
No, Gabby's not
Gabby's
not
blue,
keen.
For heaven's sakes. And,
so you know, was the uniform.
It was, I didn't like it. But, I mean, it wasn't just about me. Neither did anybody else. It was about, you know, how warm it was. And it just didn't seem to me it conveyed an image about what we thought was important. And that was like Victoria Police felt like it was part of the community and looked like it. So there was also trousers and, you know, all the rest of the gear, shoes and baseball caps.
The caps were fantastic.
The baseball caps was really something. So listening to people, we kind of went, okay, and I think it just brought about quite a significant change. I mean, some people said it was, oh, you know, you look terrible. And plus ties and all those things were just about making people feel comfortable with us and the members of Victoria Police feeling comfortable in their uniforms. And I reckon they look fantastic.
And more approachable.
And that was really a very important part. So the baseball caps I never got, but the baseball caps was really about saying to the members, listen, that's what you guys want, okay. You know, we have no good reason why you have to wear those white hats unless there's some particularly important, you know, formal occasion, and then we'll give you an order that you have to wear them. But until that, you know, so I think the uniforms are important. I think you know, issues around trying to attract a lot more people to join, listening to the members. And I remember one member said to me once, you know, I now feel like I can make a difference. So I think it was also showing Victoria Police, you know, when you set out to reduce crime, you can. When you set out to solve a problem, we could. And we could grow. 189 new police stations were built and are being built across Victoria. So that was about a whole regeneration and a lot more people joined us. And so I think they're all part of it. I mean, there are other decisions. I mean, about no alcohol in police stations. And, you know,
When was there alcohol in police stations?
Oh, you know, look, I think there was alcohol in lots of places. Lots of places where it shouldn't have been. But, you know, I think it started to just say, this is a professional organisation and we're not going to put up with that. So I remember, you know, sending out a directive that said, you know, and clear all the fridges out. And it started with mine because I arrived with this fridge and full of stuff. And so in a sense it was just that change and about it. And also I think sending signals about who was welcome in our organisation. And you know, I suppose that leads me on to the Gay Pride March, which was just, you know, it was something the members wanted me to do. And I said yes. And I didn't think any more than that. But it was about also being an organisation that welcomed people who were in it. I remember some people sent me emails, like hundreds actually, saying to me, this is just a disgrace. And I said, what are you telling me, that I can support some people and not other people? And, you know, what is that about? And I think a lot of people got it. And I remember the newspapers. Mm. One of the newspapers
bless
said,
them. I can imagine which
don't
one.
Don't bring your Sydney ways to Melbourne.
No, oh,
but
bless
they're great
them.
Sydney
That's
ways.
Cute. Sydney ways.
The Sydney ways. Always wondered what it was called.
Yeah. And so then afterwards there was a story that went, well, maybe you got it right. Maybe it was about recognising. Because it was just such a fantastic day.
It was a huge recognition for our community because it showed that there wasn't a stand apart. There wasn't a division. It was actually, we're actually all in this together.
That's it.
And I think that a lot of people just saw you in a completely different light then. Some good, but I think majority said, yeah, no, this woman's on track. She's actually about inclusion.
Well, I think the other part I got was a lovely comment from a lovely Jewish woman who was in sort of her late 80s, I think. And I thought she was going to tell me off, you know, for having marched. But she said, no. She said, when I saw you march, I knew that you wouldn't let us be harmed ever again. Oh. And I went, gosh, that's a big, you know, weight to put on someone. But it was merely saying, you know, she lived through the Holocaust and said, you know, we were targeted, we were discriminated against, and it was wrong. And she said, and it's wrong for people to be targeted and discriminated against. And I just thought, you know, that was just fantastic. And it, I think it did. And my last, when I last marched, which was last year, was just such fun. It was just a wonderful occasion. And I, you know, felt like it was just so supportive by so many people in the community, and that was great.
Well, they'd love to see you back marching this year, but it's the anniversary of Black Saturday.
It is, and that will be, there's a church service, and of course the community is very welcome to come to St Paul's for the service at 12 o'clock on the 7th, and, you know, it will be a very tough day for very many people in our community.
It will. We'll talk a bit more about your work that you're doing now in the next portion of the show.
Christine, you've had such a tough uphill battle. I mean, talking just now about, you know, getting lots of feedback even about the Pride March. And you, when you came into this role, you were a woman. You were a New South Welshman, which is probably a double bogey against you. And then you went on to fight, you know, internal corruption in the Victorian police force as well as trying to change the culture. I mean, they're big things on your wish list. Was in corruption in particular, was that something that you had always thought would be number one on your priority list?
I think when the Premier interviewed me, I sort of talked through what I thought were the major issues. I said, but it's going to take a time till I understand what are the issues facing the organisation, and I need to listen to the community and the members and what the government wants, and that would sort of focus the priorities. But very quickly, it became obvious through the drug squad issues that we had a real problem. And my father was a senior officer in New South Wales, and he used to, as he saw it, you know, listen to the Victorians tell everybody how wonderfully clean they were and how horrible New South Wales was. And he said, and that's just not true. And so he kind of set the warning bells and, you know, pretty much not all that long afterwards, I think, you know, I think I'd only been here a couple of months and the sort of opportunity with the issues around the drug squad came up. But I think also it meant that we really did need to think about it. There were people who worked in the drug squad who clearly were not in any way corrupt and were trying to do a job and do a great job, but there clearly were others. And so it was a matter of how you tried to get what the issues were, and that took a lot of energy and time and particularly a lot of people who got involved and a lot of support to be able to do that. And then it also took, we had to continue to stay in the drug space and work and try and figure out how to go forward. So it was really the start of what just continued through the whole time of reinforcing the values and standards and trying to get the corruption out of Victoria Police.
How hard is that when you're trying to do such an immense job and essentially cleaning up the Victorian police force from some bad elements? Obviously, there's a lot of good people who work in the force.
There are.
How hard is it for you to resist, all the people who are basically trying to bring you down for doing this and abuse and, you know, and all the resistance to it?
Well, I think you see you can see that side of it, but you also see this enormous number of people, both in the community and in the police, who just wanted to see change.
Right.
And they're the group that you work with. They're the ones that you're supporting and encouraging, and they're the ones who want to hold their head up high and say, I work, you know, in a good organisation, I'm proud to be a police officer, and or proud to be a member of Victoria Police, because we're bigger than just the police officers. It was quite a broad range. So I think that was important that you do that. You have a great team. I mean, none of us ever do this alone. It's just, you know, it's a great team of people who you bring around you. Some, you know, as I learned later on, let you down. But, you know, that's the way of the world. You still don't lose your trust in people because some people let you down. Mm. But you only do it when you have a broad team of people who want to go in the same direction. Yeah, most of the people in the organisation want to go in that direction, and you just keep pushing, and you can never let up. You know, there's nothing, gee, we've finished that, let's face something else. You just have to keep going and going and going on it and not lose it, because it's just such a insidious thing that happens in policing and many, many other professions, I have to say.
Mm.
We're just often a lot more public than other places. But, I mean, not only, you know, you just don't keep going down the path of corruption. You've got to go through a lot of paths to get good leadership, to get good management, good systems, to get encouragement of people to set goals and be able to achieve. And I think that's been another part of it. And the community was a great support in doing a lot of that stuff as well.
Well, Christine, you're obviously a very strong woman and you've had a lot of successes. But I'm wondering what the best piece of advice you've ever been given is.
Look,
I've had... measure your cake batter mix before it goes in. Something so incredible like that.
Oh, no. Look, I've had lots of advice and I give a fair bit of advice out. I don't know, having a belief that things are possible, is part of it. I had a great friend, a deputy commissioner, a woman in New South Wales who died, and she used to say to me, you know, be careful of what it is you're going to die in the ditch for, because they might just run you over. And, you know, you put
harsh.
All that, oh, it was harsh. But, you know, it's true. You know, you've got to figure out which fight you're going to pick and whether or not anybody's going to take any notice and whether it's going to make any difference. And so some ways, those two, the belief bit said, you know, when the advertised, you know, the job came up for the police commissioner, my father and my husband were the ones who said, come on, Christine, give it a run. I went, oh, don't be silly. Mm. You know, New South Wales woman, they haven't hired an outsider since, you know, 1956. You know, and they said, no, you can do it. I went, oh, look, what have I got to lose? Give it a run. And I think, you know, you do, but you've got to have, you know, a belief that you can do it. You've got to have some faith in yourself that you can do it, and you can do it if you listen to lots of other people, you know, as well, and, you know, be prepared to figure out where you're going to go.
There is the tall poppy syndrome, isn't there, that if you, even as strong women, and we step up, and the more you step up, the more you're kicked, the more you're knocked, the more you're criticised. Do you think that in your position that, not particularly that you were set up, but perhaps things came to the forefront a bit more, or media coverage, was that little bit more intense because, hang on, there's a woman, how's she going to take all this one on?
Yeah, look, I think that was part of it. I knew that. I think, though, I guess I always got the sense from the media that, you know, there's a general sense that they actually wanted it to work, that there were some people who, you know, clearly... I didn't want to talk to, and they didn't want to talk to me in the media, and that's okay. You know, I don't think they ever said a positive thing about me ever. A couple of people, but the majority of people gave you a fair run, and you could get the story out. And I think what people in the community said to me is, look, you were consistent, you were calm, you know, you just tried to work your way through a lot of the stuff and behave with dignity, and that's the best you can do. And I think, you know, in the end, that's the best. You know, you can't do much more than that.
I don't mean that this to sound demeaning in any way, shape, or form, having said that. But do you think that...
Is that with great respect, you know, one of those
yes,
lines?
That's yeah. a great intro.
With great respect. Do you think that in light of what you've just said about people and your public persona has definitely been one of the calm, dignified... I know I'm dealing with a whole lot of ball dust here, but, you know, we're getting through it and I'm going to get through it, and don't you worry, you just wait and watch me. Do you think there's a little bit of, you know, the Mother Earth thing going on there?
There is,
it's a little bit like we've got Mother Maternal in charge of our police force, and the world's just going to be right with it?
Look, I've I think there's got to be a piece of that, actually. I have thought about that on occasion. I thought being someone's aunt might have been a bit nicer than their mother, but I got this wonderful wonderful email once from a young police officer who I don't know what had happened, but he said, you know, he sent me an email, actually, on our system, because anybody could write. You're just like my mum. And I wrote back and said, I'm not old enough to be your mum. And he wrote back and said, oh, yes, you are. And I just thought it was a cute sort of example. But you do on occasions, because if you think about what mums do, which is maybe why the mums are supportive, is they set standards. Mm-hmm. You know, they hold on to those standards, but they're very supportive of you in the main. You know, if you've got a mum like mine, and like I hope lots of other people have got, mum set the standards, but she also, you know, she knows you're never going to make them all the time. But if you fall apart, she'll pick you up and say, come on, off you go again. Mm. And I think that's a piece of that behaviour. There's a great study done in 1992 about the best qualities for managers. And it was done by, it's called the Carpen Report, and it was the first time I ever saw validation for the idea of mothering as a good skill for managers. Hmm. And that women, in fact, could, you know, possess the skills for the new managers of the future. And so I obviously, you know, drag this out all the time and show people. but, you know, Carpen was a national study, and it did say that perhaps those sorts of skills in leadership and management are the skills that the new manager should have. And it meant it opened the door for women to lead organisations and to behave, you know, in the way that was not the male model, but was a model that was about being a female and being clear and being strong and setting standards and limits and goals and saying, come on, we can achieve those, we can get there.
It's amazing. We are talking to Christine Nixon on Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. We will be back shortly. But if you do have a question, we are quite happy to ask Christine for you. You can SMS us on 0427 Joy 949. You're listening to Hear Me Roar.
If you are a proud Joy sponsor.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
I will come for you at night time. I will raise you from your sleep. I will kiss you in four places.
You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94 tonight. 94.9, I've lost it. Joining us is Christine Nixon. Christine, we've talked about quite a few things, and one of your, was it an initiative of yours, or were you a part of the GLOW process of getting GLOWs into the police force?
I think it was a real initiative of the members, actually.
It was, yes.
It was. I mean, it was the part of you know, people within policing who really felt like we needed to be doing a lot more to support the community and to have people within the gay and lesbian community felt confident about and wouldn't get to know. And so it really came out of, you know, the best ideas come out of the people in an organisation. If you just shut up and listen occasionally, you know, helps you.
It was the Equal Opportunity Commission and Victoria Police working together, yep, because the GLBT community realised that they really weren't being assisted in a way that they should be, and that's how the GLOW initiative came about. But Christine Nixon was very supportive and behind it.
Oh yeah, very supportive, and partly that was also my experience from New South Wales, where you know, we'd had a long history really of working and supporting you know, improving relationships with the gay and lesbian community, and it was just a great thing. So when Victoria Police, you know, went that way, I was really happy to support it. Was great, great job and great people involved.
Are there any other initiatives relating to the GLBTIQ community that you have been involved in?
Oh, I think there was also policy stuff. It was also around violence. It was on recognising the violence within the community and about how people needed to get support. And I think that was part of a sort of a side issue to the family violence, domestic violence discussions as well. Mm. I mean, I suppose there was lots of different sorts of things that people did over time, and that were really about attracting people to join us. I have to tell you, though, a little side story in New South Wales. We did an advertising campaign. I'm not sure Victoria could have coped, but New South Wales coped.
Oh, come on.
And it was a campaign which said, join New South Wales Police and we'll give you the levers. And can you imagine? This is a police organisation actually advertised, you know, like. And I thought it was,
and they're
fantastic.
Not blue leather either.
No, they were black leather.
Aren't they?
Case, yeah.
No, they're really nice jackets.
And they're horrid jackets.
She
and And the other one was with Join New South Wales and we'll give you sensible shoes.
Oh, see that one? Ooh, I don't know.
It's gorgeous.
It is.
Anyway, they are very sensible. So I think it was kind of, I think we'd also did some advertising to encourage people to join us, to think about policing as a career too.
Us New South Welsh people, we're very forward-thinking.
And stuff, yeah.
Talking about forward thinking, you've got to meet some amazing people.
A little birdie told me, well, in fact, it was you, that you met Olivia Newton-John.
A big birdie.
I did. No.
My hero.
Oh dear. We were at a fundraiser and she was there because of her support of the Cancer Foundation at the Alfred. And yes. So I was at the function. It was a charity function. And so was Judith Durham. And so there's a point about this, and the police band was playing. And so we then sort of, one thing led to another, and instead of Olivia, I met Olivia and said I thought she was fantastic and she is a lovely woman, and instead of either of them singing, the police band said, oh, Christine, come and sing with us. I went, oh, God. You know.
They had a Joan Kerner moment.
I did, yes.
Fabulous.
Yes. So, look, she was lovely and she was raising funds and it was a great thing to see.
Because you have had the opportunity to meet so many people. Mm. But towards the end of the police commissioner role, in the media, things were going a bit sour.
Mm.
In the she says. So before we link into, because I do want to talk about your current role now as within the bushfires, definitely, and we have some SMSs that we will definitely get to. But within the last part, and when you went to meet Olivia and John Travolta, oh, he was my hero too, by the way.
Ah, yes.
Yes, can't help but put that one in. There was all this hoo-ha. I'd like to use just the word hoo-ha because I think that sums it up, about you going on an aeroplane trip with your husband.
Yes.
Which seems quite perfectly normal to me. Yes. But a lot of people in the media said, no, hang on a minute, that wasn't right. Can you just go through that with us?
Yeah. Look, I mean, my view of what happened was my husband worked in airlines for 30 years, and at a function, it turned out he sort of got asked that the A380 was going to be flying an inaugural flight, and you know, would he like to come, and would I like to come? Kind of that was the discussion, and went, yeah, sure, nothing's going to happen. Well, actually, you know, it did.
It blew
and
up.
It did.
Not the plane.
No. And so we went. I have to say, I got onto the plane thinking this is a mistake. You know,
really?
That people would see it in the way you saw it. I was there because of him.
Mm.
And, you know, then they said, no, actually, Christine, it was really about you. And once they interrogated Qantas, Qantas, you know, clearly sort of said, yes, it was about you. It wasn't about him at all. And so, you know, that all then led to the point when I made a major error here and said so and paid money to – Qantas didn't want the money, of course, to a charity on the basis of what I'd done. Look, you know, things happen like that to you, and it was stupid. I should have been paying more attention. I should have talked to people about it, and you know, it's a good lesson. I'd come to the point where I'd already wanted to leave the police by then, because I'd been there for 8 years and you've got to know when to go. And I was heading to that, and I know people have sort of said to me, oh, it's a shame you went because of that. I didn't go because of that. I was always going to go, and it was just a matter of timing, and eventually got to the point where I went, enough, we need to say I'm going
to
go.
Do you think to a point then you were set up to a degree that
somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I think probably, you know, it's a way to see it. I should have had, you know, you got to say, you know, wear it. I made a mistake and I should have had more brains than that and recognised what was going to happen. You know,
I disagree. I don't think you should have had more brains. I think you're a very sensible woman.
I think you probably deserved a trip.
I think,
good Lord.
You'd never had a trip. You weren't looking for a freebie. I mean, I would have gone. It was Olivia Newton-John. You know,
I think we should need to forget Olivia Newton-John, because we've been talking off air about a much more famous celebrity that Christine has met through her role with the bushfires and Black Saturday. So tell us all about Prince William, and then we can lead into the very important stuff about Black Saturday and your role now.
His people in the palace and our protocol in the government had said that he was coming to Australia and very much wanted to meet with the bushfire affected communities. He had a relatively short period of time, and so they said to me, well, Christine, you can show him around. I went, fine, good, really. I never quite imagined the effect it would have on people. Certainly the bushfire people who got to meet him thought he was fantastic. He is a lovely young man. He was interested, enthused. He asked really good questions. He had fun. He had made fun of himself. He made fun of other people. He was just put people at ease and was terrific to watch. At Whittlesea, You know, lots of people came out. It was supposed to be a secret, I think, that he was going to be there. But he, you know, went and met lots of people. He met a number of the families who'd been affected by the fires. And then he went and played cricket and, you know, he was out there. Clearly he's not the world's best cricketer. but, you know, the Australian cricket team was there to help. And so it was a great day and he is a very nice young man.
We've got somebody who thinks you're absolutely fabulous. Really enjoying the discussion, ladies. Ms. Nixon, I think you're truly an amazing woman. Always just... Have I read this one?
Yeah,
just,
you did.
Oh, well, I'm going to read it again.
It was worth reading twice.
Always displaying grace, warm... I love it, though. And professionalism under pressure. And Tristan's called in and he's asked, do you think we will have another Black Saturday?
Look, I hope not, Tristan. I think that that particular day, when you think about it, was really a firestorm. The temperature, the weather... You know, all of those things were just so unusual. But, look, we could get another, you know, day, certainly temperatures that way. Hopefully people will have thought a lot about what they're going to do. We've got a lot better communication systems, a lot better coordination perhaps and once the Royal Commission reports, you know, there'll be a lot of other advice that we'll put into place. But, gosh, I hope not.
We've got another SMS here that kind of ties in both your roles now because obviously you've been working for a year with bushfire victims. And the question comes from Callie, and she says, as a previous police officer and in a current role working with bushfire victims, do you think we should reconsider the current laws regarding arsonists?
I mean, the arson issue is certainly in these current bushfires part of it. There is a person who has been charged with arson, and there are still investigations, as I understand it, ongoing about some of the other fires. And so it's a matter, I suppose, of how you deal with an arsonist. But it needs to be community information. You know, it's probably looking at what the research tells us about how to deter people. It's about communities, if you're concerned, calling the police, calling the fire people, you know, whatever, doing something about it, not just letting it go. And it's a pretty hard offence to deal with. You know, that they even catch people is always a bit of a surprise to me.
We have another text which actually relates to mental health issues. This is, how would Christine improve police dealings with mental health patients if you'd stayed in the job?
Look, we were doing a lot of work within Victoria Police to really try and think through the skills of police officers, the kind of resources and support that we needed to be able to deal with people who had mental health issues. And, you know, it's always a very difficult area and it's about how much capacity there is in the system to support people with mental health. There's a lot of people who've got a responsibility, people's own doctors, family members. You know, there's a lot of people need to be part of it. So we were working through, it was a very good policy position we had, and talking with the whole of government about how to support it. Now there's also a part, I think, they're going to launch fairly soon about a new training program for police officers.
It was launched, I think, yesterday or today, okay. Where we're in our training, where we're teaching about mental health issues, how to deal with people suffering from mental health issues, communication, because that's a big part of it, identifying whether alcohol or drugs or mental health is involved and how we can deal with that situation without it escalating.
And I think the Mental Health Fellowship work with us. We work with Professor Pat McGorry. I was delighted to see him.
Australian of the Year.
Yep. He's a great bloke and he was talking to us about young people and mental health facilities and support for young people. So we were doing a lot of work in different ways and so I would have continued that, but Simon Overland's doing that.
We only have about 1 minute left and I want to chain you up in the studio, which I know is against law, but I don't care. You are working very, very fiercely with the Kinglake fires, with all of the fire issues. What are you doing at the moment in particular?
Look, we've been working really closely with 78 communities affected by the bushfires, and very, very many of those people are still traumatised by the loss and the grief and the trauma of the fire itself. And so we're doing a lot of work with the communities to help them think about the future. We have 33 community recovery committees telling us about what kind of things will help people. We have a bereaved group that we're meeting with to help us figure that out. As we get close to the anniversary, it will be a really difficult time for many people. The Ballarra fires, their anniversary is this Sunday, and then the 7th will be obviously a really significant time. So we're working really hard to try and help people through this. And a lot of our community have just done, you know, enormous amount, both their time and their energy and their support, their money has gone towards helping people recover. And I know those communities are incredibly grateful for that.
Well, Christine, we are incredibly grateful for the work you've done for the GLBTIQ community and for women within Australia. And certainly you've been an inspiration to me and many women I know. So we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. We had one more very last SMS come in from Trish. Said, really interesting interview with Christine. I've met her a number of times and she's a wonderful, wonderful person. Fab questions.
Great interviewers. You know, well done, you guys.
We're not letting you go.
No, we've had an awesome time. It's been a real privilege to have you in the studio.
It's
been
fabulous.
You very much.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for all you've done for Victoria Police.
Thanks, Gabby. Very kind of you.
Oh, so I feel the love.
That's a loving.
Group hug.
You've been listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.